Just a simple question to begin today. Is mothering learned? I don't really feel like I'm the expert here, but anyway, I'm going to share with you what I can. Isn't it surprising, and I may have told this story before, about how a simple thing can take on a life of its own? And this happened to me simply because I shared a little joke and shared a story about my mother, who's here today. It happened on Saturday, March the 5th, 2016, when Donway Baptist Church, where I used to serve, hosted a town hall meeting sponsored by our MP at the time, Miss Yasmin Ratanzi. And it was all a gathering to celebrate International Women's Day. And I was asked to kind of be the host and to welcome everybody and share a reflection of a woman who made a difference in my life. And I began my remarks with a story of a minister who got up in front of his congregation one morning and said this to them: "I want to tell you all that some of the best moments in my life have been spent in the arms of another man's wife." As you can imagine, there was an audible gasp throughout the congregation, and the minister paused for some dramatic effects and then proceeded to say this: "I also want you to know that I call her Mom." Think about that. I then went on to make the point that much of how we think about our gender issues, and that was the theme of the day, reflects the influence of our mothers. Fathers as well, but I was reflecting on women's issues that day. I thought that was the complete end of that little escapade, until a few weeks later there appeared at the church a heavy envelope with a padded portfolio inside it, embossed with the Parliament of Canada logo, which contained a printed notice. It was actually a report from Parliament. It seems Miss Ratanzi rose in the House of Commons on March the 10th and said in part was talking about our town hall meeting. And she said, "In the Parliament of Canada, I would like to thank Reverend Daryl McGuire for reminding us that it is the women, our mothers, who nurture society. His example of his mother and the influence she had on his life was uplifting. It is important to recognize the achievement of women and know there is so much to be done to promote gender equality in Canada and across the world." What I said that day about my mother and society in general, it still holds true. And especially it's poignant today because today is Mother's Day. Perhaps it was the recognition of how important mothers are that motivated one Anna Jarvis. And I believe that's her picture right there. In 1905, Anna's mother passed away, and the grief of that loss to her was unbearable. On the anniversary of her mother's death, on the second Sunday in May, Anna invited some friends over and announced that she had an idea for a nationwide celebration to be called Mother's Day. Anna's first step in her plan was to write the Methodist Church in Grafton, Virginia, where her mother attended for many years. She suggested that that church hold a special service in which mothers would receive special recognition. And so on May 10th, 1908, the very first Mother's Day service was held in Grafton, Virginia. And the minister spoke on John 19, 26 to 27, these words: "Then Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby. He said to his mother, 'Dear woman, here is your son,' and to the disciple, 'Here is your mother.' And from that time on, the disciple took her into his home." Miss Jarvis was there, and she presented each mother at the service with a carnation, which happened to be her mother's favorite flower. Now, Miss Anna Jarvis had a vision of a national celebration, and so she took to a letter-writing campaign, letters to Congress, to mayors, to ministers throughout the country. And then finally, Woodrow Wilson, president at the time, declared in 1914 that the second Sunday in May would henceforth be known as Mother's Day. Now, just so you're wondering, we Canadians adopted that same celebration a few years later to come in line with our American neighbors. The story goes on, though, however, rather sadly. Anna Jarvis became very unhappy with the commercialization of Mother's Day. She launched, believe it or not, numerous lawsuits against companies who sought to profit from the holiday. All those lawsuits failed, and she went bankrupt and ended up on public assistance. In 1948, Anna Jarvis died poor, childless, and very unhappy. I feel real sad thinking about Anna Jarvis. She clearly adored her mother. And as a legacy, she sought to have all the mothers of her nation anyway be honored as she wanted to honor her own mother. The greeting card businesses, florists, restaurants, even though they were sued by Anna Jarvis, still owe her a great debt. Because without her tireless efforts to bring about Mother's Day, their bottom line would be a lot leaner today. I know Anna Jarvis sacrificed a lot to bring about this day, but I suspect that few among us would suggest that we do away with this special day. Those of us who still have our mothers recognize how blessed we are. And those of us whose mothers have gone to God would love nothing better than to give their mother one more carnation and take them to their favorite restaurant. But, as I'm speaking to the choir, perhaps, being a mother is not for the faint of heart. Norman Bales, in talking about family ministry, writes this: the mom ministry is one of the toughest assignments God gives anyone. She's got to be as insightful as a psychologist, tough as a Marine Corps drill sergeant, gentle as a nurse. She's got to be a labor and management negotiator, a teacher, an electrician, a plumber, a carpenter. It requires an endless supply of energy, a massive amount of patience, an iron will, and a recognition of the fact that if she gets sick, she's got to get better before the end of the school day. However, there is an unsettling trend in our society that seems to want to belittle the role of motherhood and really parenting in general. What frightens me even more is this belittling of parenthood is leading to a whole host of social problems. I remember reading a story, I looked it up because it just stuck with me all these years. On April the 25th, 2016, at 1 a.m. in the morning, there was a story in the Toronto papers about a toddler who was discovered wandering around in a neighborhood outside of its home crying for its mother, 1 a.m. It seems that the father had been away on the night shift at work, and mother decided to leave her 3-year-old at 1 o'clock in the morning because she wanted to have a pizza. And all of us in this room, we've heard horror stories about parents who go to casinos and leave their small children in parked cars while they head into the casino to gamble for hours. I do not think for a moment this denigration of parenting is all about the old debate of career versus family. I don't buy it. Frankly, many of us in this room grew up with both parents working, mostly out of sheer necessity. Have you seen how expensive it is to just buy and maintain a home today? or just buy groceries, for goodness sakes. That was the case in my family growing up. My mom and dad both worked. I think the problem is the growing narcissism in our society in which even the needs of our own children are sacrificed for our own personal gratification, whether it be for pizza or something else. What bothers me is the idea that our time and our effort to parent our children are somehow of secondary value to lesser things. It is high time we restored in society's mind and heart the deep value of godly parenting. The stakes are incredibly high. This is what I was trying to communicate that day long ago at Donway, at my words at the town hall meeting. The person I became and we all become is greatly influenced by our time in the arms of another man's wife. We call her mom. Good mothers are always prepared to set aside their own wants for the betterment of their children. On a side note, there's someone in this congregation who told me how their own mother would forego eating so there'd be enough food for her children. That's what mothers did. It is critical to the health of our society that we have great mothers and great fathers. Men and women who will guide into maturity future leaders of our communities and our nation. If this is a goal we all believe is important, then we need to pay real close attention to the lesson from Titus. In a nutshell, the Apostle Paul is telling Titus that good mothering, and I will extend that to say good fathering as well, does not come out of a vacuum. Good parenting does not come naturally like breathing. Now, some aspects of parenting are kind of natural to us. We find it kind of easy, especially when they're little and they're cute, to love our children. But ask any teacher, and we have some in our congregation, about what they see in the classroom these days and what they know about the home life of some of their students, and you learn very quickly that not all is right. Not always, but surely many of the adults we know or hear about whose lives are truly messed up got that way at least partially because of what they experienced at home. Now here's the shocking bit of news from Titus. I'm glad you're sitting down for this. I really am. Some of the dysfunction found in families is not parents' fault. There, I said it. Well, Paul said it. Did you see verse 4? These older women must train younger women. I wonder how many of you grimaced at that. What are they to train them to do? Love their husbands and children, to live wisely and be pure, to take care of their homes, to do good and be submissive to their husbands. I'm leaving that alone, that last phrase. Training moms and really dads is therefore, according to the Apostle Paul, a community thing. It's not about meddling in other people's affairs. That's not what this is about. But it is also certainly not about taking a hands-off approach either. There's a saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, Paul's saying it takes a church to raise a family. Paul saw the church as a living organism, the body of Christ. The people in the church were all connected, were all working together for the health of the whole. In 1 Corinthians 12, he talks about how when one of us suffer, we all suffer. When one of us rejoices, we all rejoice. In profound ways, there is no such thing as minding your own business in a church family. How we manage our lives and manage our homes, our business dealings, are relevant to our faith community. If you want to live a life of anonymity, don't join a church. There is, of course, a difference from being a busybody and lovingly intervening in someone's life to make a difference. There is a difference. If Paul had had the word available to him, he might have used the word mentoring. Paul says that older women are to set an example of a godly life. Older women are to help younger women to become godly in their own walk with Jesus. Implied here is that right living and right teaching, they go hand in hand. Now, one thing that someone might want to raise is a question about, well, what therefore, Daryl, does it constitute an older woman? I don't know if I want to touch that. Personally, I don't think it has anything to do with chronological age. It is more about our attitude. It's more about our life's experience. Maybe the phrase, she's an old soul, fits here. I don't know. Surely Paul means women who have experienced a bit more of life than others. Maybe he means women whose children are grown and no longer need their mother's full attention. That's possible. Older women are surely those who can honestly say, I've been there, done that. One surefire way to know if you might be in the older woman category is if you see a younger woman, especially a mother, taking a certain course of action and you say, tsk, tsk, tsk. In my day, we would never have done it that way. Remember, notice again that I didn't say that makes you an old woman, but rather older than the younger woman. That's all I'm talking about. In a healthy church environment, older women and men can mentor younger adults. That's what we're supposed to do. We can empathize with their struggles. We can offer guidance when it's asked of us. We can carefully and lovingly intervene when we see someone heading down a treacherous path of life. It's not that we're know-it-alls, but we do know some things. As a church, we are to be incarnating the body of Christ. Our collective God-given wisdom is exponentially far greater than the wisdom we possess on our own. The overall goal here is a ministry of love. We work together to learn to love each other and enhance the love in our homes. Yes, many of us could say something about how we should love our spouses. Yes, many of us could talk about how we should love our children, our grandchildren, our nieces and nephews. We're not talking about mushy feelings here. We're talking about agape love. Full, complete love. Elisa Morgan and Carol Kai Kendall, that's quite a name, in their book, What Every Child Needs, speaks of 9 basic needs a child needs to be expressed in love. I'm going to be brief with them, but here they are. A child needs security. That is the kind of hold me close love. A child needs affirmation. That's please be crazy about me love. A child needs belonging and discipline, guidance, respect, play, independence, and hope. All children need to experience these 9 loves. And the primary source of those expressions of love need to come from their mothers and fathers. We've got to stop assessing the success of any family by how much money they have, or the house they live in, or the car they drive, but rather by the quality and the depth of love within that home. The greatest achievement any family on this planet is that we love one another. Being a mother, Paul Ware states, is a soul craft. Moms are partners with God in crafting a child into an adult that is trained and ready to serve Him. Consider the life and the ministry of Paul's protege, Timothy. Remember him? Timothy was prepared for the work he did for God. Paul writes, I know that you sincerely trust the Lord, for you have faith, you have the faith of your mother Eunice and your grandmother Lois. Time and time again, the Bible tells us that nothing is more important than love. Love of God and love for each other. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, if we did amazing sacrificial things, but we do not have love, we are nothing. Please don't let anyone ever tell you that making the priority of love in your family is at the core of what's important to you. Don't let anybody tell you that that's frivolous or a waste of your time or a waste of your resources. Don't let the world's idea of what makes a person successful make you think any less of your role as a mother or father or grandparent. We should wear our titles as mothers and fathers not with pride, but with the acknowledgement that it's a calling from God. You know, just to bring this all full circle, there was a mother who filled out some forms in a county clerk office, and she was asked what her job was. And she replied to the clerk, well, I'm a mother. And she was told that being a mother was not an acceptable job title. So in that place where it said occupation, this is what she wrote. It's beautiful. I'm a research associate in the field of child development and human relations. I have a continuing program of research, which mother doesn't, in a laboratory and in the field, that means indoors and out. I am working for my master's, for the whole family, and already have 4 credits, that means 4 daughters. Of course, the job is one of the most demanding in the humanities, and I often work 14 hours a day, 24 is more like it. But the job is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill careers, and the rewards are in satisfaction rather than just money. Beautiful. Absolutely. If we want a strong society, if we want well-adjusted future leaders, then we need to do all we can to mentor and support young mothers and fathers in our midst. This is the church's calling. It's the church's responsibility. Can mothering be learned? Absolutely. And every time we get together as a church family, we can honestly say, school's in session.